Thank you very much, Rob. And thank you, Bayside Church, for having me here this morning. It's wonderful to be able to share with you this morning, as Rob said, to share something of God's heart and to explore what a partnership might look like between Prison Fellowship and Bayside Church, and hopefully mobilise people into the prison system in Victoria. Let me start with this from Matthew 25. We read, "When the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I was in prison, and you came to visit me.' Then the righteous will answer him, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?' And the king will reply, 'Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me.'" As Rob said, my wife is here and with me today, which is a great treat. She doesn't often come around when I'm speaking at different churches, but it's great to have her with me this morning. We've been married nearly 17 years now. And I discovered very early on as a young man, early in our marriage, that I had much to learn. Certainly I had much to learn in the topic of laundry. You know, how to hang clothes up. Where the pegs need to go on those clothes when you hang them up. Ensuring that the socks stay together throughout the process all the way through so that apparently you get a pair at the end as well. That's important. Certainly what must go in the dryer and what must not go in the dryer. All these things I learned, but the big one I learned was the separation of the clothes. The lights, the darks, the colours. And it's a lesson that you really only need to learn once you're wearing a pink shirt that used to be white. You think, okay, there's something to this separation. Jesus is returning, we just read. Jesus is painting a picture of us of that glorious day when he will come back. On that day, there will be justice. There will be ultimate justice. And there will be a separation that happens. That separation will be perfect and it will be final. On that day, there are no darks slipping through into the whites pile like the washing. Our God is a loving and compassionate and merciful God. And it's an all-powerful love that he has for us. But he loves us so much that he cannot allow any hint of sin to be present on that day. In heaven, there will be no sin. There will be complete separation of the righteous and the unrighteous. And those who are considered to be righteous will be saved not only from the consequences of their sin, but they will be saved from the very presence of sin. Absolute perfection in heaven. And so as we look at that passage, the question is, how is Jesus going to make that determination? Who is on the left and who is on the right? Who are the sheep and who are the goats? And I think a very simple answer to that question is the fact that sheep will act like sheep and goats will act like goats. In Matthew 7, we read, "By their fruit you will recognize them. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Likewise, every good tree bears good fruit, and a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. Sheep will act like sheep and goats will act like goats. There will be evidence in your life of being a sheep or a goat. And again, if we go back to that passage in Matthew 25, how we treat each other, Jesus is saying, is a direct representation of how we treat Jesus, of how our relationship with Jesus looks. Do we feed the hungry? Do we give water to those who are thirsty? Do we invite the stranger in? I know that Bayside just had a team of people go and participate and sleep out at the G and raised an incredible amount of money to assist Melbourne's homeless. Do we clothe those who are naked? Are we caring for the sick? And right there in that list, are we visiting the prisoners? Our attitudes and our behavior show the fruit of our faith. They show what our relationship with Jesus looks like. This is not about earning our way into heaven. This is not about earning our salvation. That is only secured through Jesus on the cross. But our faith should be obvious. We are called to love God and we're also called to love our neighbor. And that means caring for those who are like us and who we like and who we enjoy hanging out with, and also caring for those who are not like you and not like me, and people who perhaps we really struggle to identify with. Jesus tells the story about the Good Samaritan. Now we know that the Jews and the Samaritans did not get along and there were so many differences. And yet the Samaritan cared for the Jew. How we treat each other is that representation of our relationship with Jesus. And so Prison Fellowship's mission is to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with prisoners, ex-prisoners, and their families. We are often caring for those who are not like us. We are often caring for those who we really struggle to like. And we are showing the compassionate and the merciful heart of God to those who are not easy to love, to those who have done terrible things. I always ensure that when I'm speaking anywhere, I make it very clear that Prison Fellowship does not advocate on behalf of prisoners. We recognize that there are people in prison who need to be there. That is the best place for them. It's the best place for our community. This is not about saying the system is unjust and we need to change the system. No, this is about saying there are people in here who are still loved by God. Even those who we perhaps have very little in common with. One of our ministries is a sports ministry called SLAM. We have a lot of young adults and older. In fact, we do have a 72-year-old who participates in our SLAM sports ministry. Used to be a professional soccer player. His legs don't work quite as quickly as they used to, but his brain certainly does, and he's still a better soccer player than most of us. But we go into prison. We play a number of games over the course of a Saturday. We'll have the men come out from one unit. We'll play a game against them. One of our team will share a testimony, a story of hope from their life with the men that we've just played with. And then they'll go after some time of discussion and a new group will come out. It's a pretty demanding ministry. We're playing against a lot of fit people who have a lot of time to train. And often we come out pretty exhausted after four or five games in a prison in a day. But there's something about sport, and perhaps, I don't know, just maybe it's growing up in Melbourne, but there's something about sport that joins that connection, that creates that connection. One day after a game of basketball, where I'm pretty sure we got completely thrashed again, I was chatting with one of the guys. One of our team had shared his testimony. Chatting with one of the guys we'd just been playing against, and I was kind of doing this, talking to him. His name was Ben, and he was from an outlaw motorcycle gang. He and a number of other people from that gang were in that prison. And as we got talking, I asked him a bit about his life. And I very quickly realized that Ben and I had very little in common. In fact, there was nothing that he was talking about that I could really grasp in terms of a common connection. The only thing we really had in common was that game of basketball we just played together. And yet that opened up the door for conversation. And I was able to talk about the hope that I had and hopefully share some of that compassion and that mercy that God has for him and to reveal something of the gospel to him in that situation. One of our other programs is called Change on the Inside. It's a 6-week character development course where we encourage inmates to think about developing positive character qualities in their life. We had one guy in a course that we were running who was sitting at the back, and he really, I'm not sure if he really wanted to be there, but he made it his mission to try and put us all off our game. So we would ask for examples or ask for answers of questions, and he would throw up the most grotesque and disgusting things he could, trying to perhaps get a reaction from us as the facilitators. And our team just continued to love him. Week in, week out, listening to his story, listening to his answers, and yet in the breaks in going and engaging him. John, can we make you a coffee? John, tell us more about your life. And again, week after week, just going back, being faithful and serving this guy, showing him the respect that he certainly wasn't showing us. And again, revealing something of the light of the gospel to him. We are a ministry, as I said, that ministers to the unlovely. We minister to the broken, to the messed up, to the addicted, to the confused, to the lonely, to the hurting, to the smelly, to the angry. A different Change on the Inside course, inside a maximum security prison. The course talks about different issues that inmates face and positive character qualities that they can develop. So we look at things like choices, decisions and consequences, and the character quality of responsibility. Or we look at anger management and the character quality of self-control. We get to week 4 in the course and we talk about healthy relationships and the character quality of forgiveness. We're running this course. There is a guy in the back row. They always seem to sit in the back row. There's a guy in the back row and he has not said a word for 3 weeks of this course. He's faithfully attended, but he has not participated at all. We get to the topic of forgiveness. And he rocks back on his chair and he says, "You don't know what you're talking about." He says, "It's not that easy." And I had to agree with him. I said, "No, I agree, it's not that easy." And this guy had been called the angry one by all the other inmates in that course for the previous 3 weeks. I didn't know his name. It was just referred to as the angry one. And he rocks back, says, "It's not that easy. You don't know what you're talking about." And then he opened up and then he shared for the first time. He said, "I was raised by my grandparents. My grandfather was a pretty harsh bloke, used to hit me." He said, "I didn't know who my parents were. I had an older sister who lived in Queensland, and I didn't know anything else apart from that." He said, "At the age of 12, I was going through my grandparents' study. I looked in their filing cabinet and I found my birth certificate. And I discovered that my older sister in Queensland was in fact my mum, and my whole family had been lying to me all my life." And he said, "And I lost it. I said, 'How dare you treat me like this, not tell me this?' A short time later, his mum came down from Queensland and he said, 'We had it out. We tore the house to shreds. We had this massive argument that lasted 2 hours.' He said, she denied it. She denied that I was her son. He said, after 2 hours, she finally relented and she said, 'Fine, you're mine and I wish I'd never had you.'" And that 12-year-old kid was still sitting there at age 32 in that course. We deal with angry people We deal with lonely and hurting and addicted and messed up people. But we're a ministry that says the world may hate you, but there is a God who loves you still. They know. They're very clear about the fact that there is a community out here that doesn't think much of them. And so when we are able to go in and say, you know what? We will sit next to you. We will listen to your story. We'll hear what you have to say, and we will love you, and we will tell you about a God who loves you. Then that speaks very powerfully. Many times our volunteers are asked, how could God still love me? Doesn't he know what I've done? And we say, of course he knows what you've done. But you're still his child, and God loves his kids. So yes, as we read there, there is a judgment day coming when God's perfect justice will be meted out. It's part of his character. But God's character is also that love and compassion and mercy, and his desire that all people would come to him. All people. Sometimes I think we struggle with that. I can see how God can love these people, but when we get to there, that's a much harder ask. When we're talking about people who have done that kind of thing, offended in that way, God loves all people. And when they turn and come back to him, he wraps his arms around them and says, welcome home, prodigal son, I love you. One of the greatest experiences of my 12 years in prison fellowship was standing in the middle of a maximum security prison unit and praying for a man who had just come to the end of any other option. We'd engaged in conversation and he was standing there with a Bible and an Anglican prayer book. And he said, I've been in and out of here 8 times. He said, I have tried everything. I've tried ditching old friends. I've tried changing who I hang out with. I've tried to kick this addiction. I've tried so much, but I get out and I try and I fail and I'm back in. And I get out and I try and I fail and I'm back in. And that process is just repeated and repeated. He said, this is my 8th time in prison. He said, I've been reading this Bible. And he said, I think this Jesus guy might be the answer. And so in one of those circumstances where everything else goes blurry, I mean, there was guys playing pool there, there was guys doing their laundry there, there was a guard station right there, there was all this stuff happening around us, and all of that kind of faded into nothing. And I got to stand there with him and pray as he submitted his life to Jesus. An amazing experience. Part of acting like sheep, where there is real evidence of your faith in Jesus, is being obedient to the shepherd's voice, to listening to the shepherd's voice and being obedient to it. Last year, I had the privilege of going up to Darwin. Northern Territory Corrections, in the wake of the Four Corners report on the Dondale youth detention stuff that was happening up there, had invited us to come and to explore launching a brand new part of Prison Fellowship's ministry in Darwin. While I was in Darwin, I met an amazing man. He was showing all the evidence of being a sheep, being obedient to the shepherd. Simon was the chaplain at Darwin Correctional Centre. Simon was the only chaplain for 1,000 inmates at Darwin Correctional Centre. Darwin is a fairly new prison that they've built there. It's one of Australia's biggest. You walk in the front gate and you can look for 1 kilometre that way and 1 kilometre that way before you see a wall. It's a 2 kilometre wide prison. It houses men, women, maximum, medium, minimum security inmates, 86% of whom are Indigenous. So Simon took me on a tour of this prison. It took us 3 hours to get around the prison. It was in Darwin, it was warm, and I didn't have the right footwear. So there were blisters as a result, but It took so long because after every third inmate or so that we walked past, Simon would engage and have a conversation, and then he turned to me afterwards and say, oh, he's in one of my Bible studies. And after we'd passed 30 or 40 inmates who were in Simon's Bible studies, I said, how many Bible studies do you run? He said, oh, 8 each week. 8 Bible studies a week. I left him. We have a wonderful partnership with the Bible League, and they've created the Prisoner's Bible. I left him with one of those Bibles and said, here, if this is helpful, please use it. I got back to Melbourne and had an email from Simon saying, I love this Bible. Can I have 100 copies, please? And so we sent Simon 100 copies of the Bible. 2 weeks after that, I got another email from Simon saying, they're all gone. Can I have 500 more, please? Simon's an amazing man. And we should be praying for Simon because he is doing it tough at the moment. He is on the edge, ministering to that many people in that environment, day in, day out, with that kind of passion, we need to support him. But he is a sheep being very obedient to the shepherd's voice. And so while I was up there, I was able to arrange for prison fellowship to start to get involved and to go and support Simon in that ministry. And we now have a team of 8 people who go in and run chapel services and share with inmates and start to share that load with Simon. An amazing group of people who are so passionate about living as obedient sheep for Jesus in that place. The good news for all of you at Bayside is that you don't have to go to Darwin. Although it's a lovely place for half the year. We have an amazing lot of opportunities right here in Victoria. There are opportunities to get involved in prison visiting, in running some of those more formal courses, in terms of our sports ministry. There are opportunities to support men and women as they're being released from prison. That key time of being released from prison back into community is so essential. To be able to support people when they're coming back in. We have a large ministry to children of offenders as well. We call them the forgotten victims of crime. Through no fault of their own, they have a mother or a father that's been taken away from them. And they do it really tough, and we seek to minister to those families. We have an annual camp for kids, where we take kids who are in this situation away for a week and just pour love on them and give them the most amazing experience of a week of encouragement and support and love. And there's a sense that as they come together, they realise, oh, hang on, there's other kids in my situation. And there's that burden lifted, which is awesome to see. We provide Christmas presents for those kids as well. Last year, Prison Fellowship Australia across the country supplied 7,000 gifts for children of prisoners. So it's an amazing ministry, and there are heaps of ways that people can get involved. We already have over 1,000 volunteers ministering the gospel of Jesus into the prisons and to the least of these. So we rely on the church. We are a ministry that really sees itself as a conduit between the church and the prison system. We are a ministry that relies on the church for all of our needs, financial, prayer, volunteers. Really, we are just that funnel, if you like, that people can come and be well-trained, and the prison system really appreciates the fact that there is an organisation that they know that coming out the other end of that funnel are people that they can trust in a maximum security environment. Certainly, if you'd like to know more, we'd love to talk with you more about that. We've got a couple of volunteers from Prison Fellowship here, Ian and Dave. There's a table at the back. They'll be up there after the service and be very happy. They're both been in a prison, so if you want to hear some good prison stories, I'm sure they're happy to share with you. And we also have a copy of this book, which we use in the prison fairly extensively, called Why Forgive? And if you would like one of those today, then please feel free to take one from the back table. Full of short stories, amazing stories of people who have been wronged in their life in a number of different ways and found the ability to forgive. So I encourage you to look at taking one of them as well. Just as I close, Jesus' words in Matthew 25 could not be more serious. He's talking about there's a judgment day coming. the separation on that day will actually be final. And we are called to live as his sheep, where the evidence of our faith is really clear, where we care for those around us, especially those who are not like us, especially those who are hard to like. The beauty of this is that that's all God requires of us. God's desire is that everyone would come to us. And if we live as obedient sheep, caring for those around us, then he will do the rest. So can I encourage us all this morning to live in such a way that there is evidence of our faith, and that through our actions, through our time, through our money, through our prayers, that we care for the least of these. Let me pray.